it's not, it's, yeah, it's fixed, right? We didn't fix your swing.
Right.
We fixed how you see things. And,
mm-hmm.
and it took her probably a good 3 years to finally get that to sink in.
Wow. And welcome back to another Part Train. I'm one of your co-hosts, Seven Singer. We got Mr. Matt Cermak here. We just had a lot of fun on that interview.
What's up, guys? Lots of fun, Ev.
We like
to enjoy the ride, right?
I mean, we literally enjoyed the ride on that one. In case you guys are new to the Part Train, welcome. When you're on the Part Train, golf, the hardest game in the world, feels easy, right? You're just making pars. You don't know how you're doing it. It's easy stuff. But our mission is to understand why and figure out how we can apply these lessons on and off the course to make the hard stuff seem easy and help you get better. We feature interviews from PGA Tour pros, best-selling authors, CEOs, coaches like James Hong today, and more. You'll get the motivation to keep chugging and finally learn how to enjoy the ride. Before we get to the intro, a quick word from our friends at Roback. I'm going to read a quick review from someone that bought a polo. They said, this is my fourth Roback shirt. They have become my go-to performance polo, approaching go-to casual shirt. So it's go-to casual as much as on the course. The fabric is great, does not look or feel like typical performance material. I really like the fit too. This other guy says, great shirts, perfect fit and versatile for all occasions. That's really what everyone says. It's like best fit, super comfortable, and you can wear it anywhere.
I couldn't agree more with those reviews. What Roback does so well with the polos is they bridge the gap with like kind of this traditional preppy golf, but also at leisure, right? So it works for the office. It works on the course. It works when you're just hanging out with your buddies, right? Because it's not too like Ralph Lauren, you know, but it's not too like Under Armour, right? It's just right in the middle there.
Yeah, it's perfect.
And it fits like a charm.
Yep. So guys, hit the link in our show notes. It's also always linked on our social pages at the Part Train. Give us a follow if you're not. We just had an awesome giveaway. We got a new giveaway coming soon.
Lots of giveaways.
Hit that link and you'll get 15% off your first order with Roback. No need to put a promo code in. It'll show up in your cart. And hey guys, if you've already used it, use that link. So we can still see that you're buying and get yourself the gear that you deserve, right? Yes. We're always promoting them on our social accounts if they've got a sale or something, but they really are the best. And so get 15% off your first order.
Doesn't hurt.
Okay. James Hong, this guy, to give you guys a little context, his career spanned over two decades. He's been recognized as one of the premier golf instructors and coaches in the world.
He's
currently Golf Digest named him from 2017 to 2020. I think one of the best teachers in New York, top 50 US kids golf master teacher. He does a lot of juniors, but adults as well. And he's currently the director of instruction at Harbor Links Golf Course in New York. Heard of it?
It's great.
I mean, this guy is, I really can't say of all the interviews we've done, we probably had as much fun on this one. Like it was a really good balance of really deep, good conversations about, you know, what he learns about teaching juniors that actually adults could benefit and learn from, while also a lot of attitude, a lot of mental game stuff, as well as swing stuff. He helps me with my game towards the end.
Wow. Little plane lessons virtual with the pros there. No, I think you're right, Ev. I mean, what's so fun talking to all these different pros, teaching pros, PGA Tour instructors, is they all have their own theme and vibe, right? Sometimes we get into the system. Sometimes we get into just working harder than everybody else mentality. And this was different because one, he really has this huge junior program. We've never really talked with somebody who is so focused on juniors, but the correlations between junior players and adult players. But we talked a lot about attitude, right? We talked a lot about, you know, making that hour lesson beneficial to each individual player, right? How he kind of sparks creativity from his players. But he's a guy that, you know, is just looking, I think, to get the best out of you personally, which ultimately helps your game, right? He's very individual, you know, not a one size fits all like some teachers are. Would you agree? Yep.
No, totally. No, I'm excited for you guys to listen to this. I think all of you will definitely find at least one nugget that you'll probably take with you to the course or your living room if it's super cold.
Or if it's
raining. After listening. So thank you guys as always for listening. We can't express enough how much we appreciate your messages, your comments. It means a lot to hear that.
So cool.
You know, we're helping your game and your mindsets and your attitudes and your life. That's what it's all about. And so thank you again for always listening. If you're not subscribed, please give us subscribe so you don't miss out on new episodes every Sunday, and give us a review. We want to hear from you.
Tweet us. I'm going to tweet
every time. All right, guys.
Keep enjoying the ride.
Enjoy the ride. Keep chugging and stay well out there. We'll see you next week.
See you guys. Take care.
And we're back with James Hong. James, welcome to the show. How you doing on this chilly January morning? Yeah.
Doing pretty good. Thank you for having me. Chilly for us.
Not chilly for you guys, yeah. But it's raining here in LA as we were talking off air. Okay. James, so I know a lot of interviews probably don't start out this way. They probably jump right into a question. I actually want to tell a quick story and I want to get your take on it because I actually think it's really relevant to the things we're going to talk about today. I actually just saw a clip from an interview with Kobe Bryant, and he talked about how when he first came into the NBA, he made, I think it was in either a practice or a game, I actually forget, but he took five straight shots at the free throw line and there were five air balls. And he said it would have been really easy as a rookie for him to be like, shit, I don't belong here. I came out of high school. What am I thinking? Maybe I'm not as good as I thought. But his mind didn't go to ego and self-sabotage. It actually went to, okay, that's interesting. Let's unpack this. Every shot was online. It was just a little short. So why is that? And then he started to unpack and he realized, oh, well, in high school, you play one game a week, right, for 35 minutes. And in the NBA, I'm playing game after game after game, night after night, more minutes, more games. So my legs are dead, right? And so he used that as a lesson to focus on his lower body and conditioning. And for the next season, he used that to fuel his success. And I think it's really relevant to golf, especially juniors, where a lot of people make a bad shot. And it's immediately, oh, I suck. I can't believe I didn't do this. Instead of using it as information to get better and inform, you know, your path forward. So I just wanted to get your take because we've heard you speak before and we know how important this type of stuff is to improvement.
Oh yeah, I think that's a great example there of what a lot of people don't do. You're absolutely right. And especially when they're at the driving range, you could see it. They hit a ball and the ball's not even halfway out, not even at its apex. And they're turning around, they're grabbing another ball. And so there's no sense of watching the shot, getting feedback and stuff like that, or even thinking about whatever it is they're trying to do, did they do it? And, you know, a lot of times this is just like a pass fail thing. I either hit a good shot or I didn't, instead of, did I do what I was supposed to do, regardless of if the result turned out fine. And so, you know, I got to look for that video. And
I can send it to you after this.
Yeah, that's actually a great example. And yeah, I wish more people would do that. And that's something that I try to get across. I mean, I've done it where, like I said, I'll see a person, they'll hit a ball and they immediately look down, they're grabbing another ball. I'll walk right in there and I'll stand on top of the ball. And basically, obviously the implication is if you're going to swing that club, you're hitting me. So don't hit me. And I'll start asking them questions. Like, what'd you see there? I'll just start off with like, what were you trying to do? What was that single thing that you were trying to do? And they'll tell me, or they might even just say, oh no, especially kidding. Oh, no. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that's when I'll usually say one of two things. I'll either say, well, if you didn't know, then that was just a wasted 30 seconds right there. Or I'll say, you do know. Because if you didn't know, you wouldn't have done what you just did if you didn't know. because sometimes, especially juniors, they don't want to search. They don't want to be Sherlock Holmes. They don't want to be a detective and kind of deduce what was going on. And so, yeah, again, that's a great example. So,
yeah, it's really interesting. My coach growing up used to say when we, you know, play, you know, have a bad round. So I grew up playing. I played in college and played as a junior. And he'd say, hey, that round didn't define you. That shot didn't define you, but it did reveal you. Right.
Oh, and, yeah, exactly.
Right. I'm sure you speak to your, but I think that's important. Right. Because step back, like, what was this? What's the story? What's the backstory here? Right.
Right. I mean, I think, you know, not just with juniors, but with adults, it's like, I'll ask the adult, if you had, especially someone who's high up in wherever they're working, it's like, if you had someone underneath you treating their position or their job the way you're treating this, what would you do to them? It's like, right. You'd either send them back to retraining, or you'd sit them down, have a discussion with them, or basically they'd be out the door. Yeah. And so it's like, if you're looking for improvement in your game, it's like, what would you expect one of your employees to do in that same scenario? And do it yourself.
It's funny, sure. Matt, I think I forget if it was Sean Foley or another coach we've had on, but I think someone has said that before, where someone was like, if you treated your golf, or if people treated business like they treated their golf, they would be out on the street with a cup asking for spare change.
Absolutely. Without a doubt. It's sometimes what happens is they don't want to look within themselves. They just see everything else and will make judgments. And I'm guilty of that. But then when it comes to their own game, it's almost like we inherently treat ourselves as the exception to the rule. Mm-hmm. Well, it's okay for me to slack off, but how dare you do that? So yeah, I think part of my job, part of an instructor's job, is to step in and say, first of all, what is it you're looking for? Are you just looking to have fun? Well, even something like, well, I'm not really worried about score. I just want to enjoy myself. Well, the implication then is you're not enjoying yourself now, but you'd like to enjoy yourself. So what are the steps necessary for you to just enjoy what you're doing? Forget about the score, right? Well, you know, maybe you got to work on your driver a little bit more. Maybe you got to stop trying to have like a pretty swing, and you just got to let it go. And which happens a lot too. It's, oh, you mean I can swing hard? It's like, well, no shit, Sherlock. It's like, yeah.
Well, James, like, so our motto here at the Par Train is enjoy the ride. And yeah. So that's our thing. And we've listened to you just, you know, on other interviews and things, and you talk about the importance of humor. I think a lot of people think golf is all about failure. Right. Because it's one of those sports where you just never meet your expectations. Doesn't mean you're failing, but most view it that way. So how do your players, how do golfers in general just learn to enjoy the ride more?
Yeah, actually, like, instead of telling them to avoid failure, or like, ooh, failure is a bad word, it's kind of like, I say, you realize the game is designed around you failing. Period. It's like these evil golf course architects. How far do people hit their driver? 200 yards? I think I'll put a fairway bunker right there then. It's like, right. You know, it's the old Robin Williams joke about, like, well, if the game is supposed to be easy, everything would just be a straight runway. And right. So it's enjoy the failure. The game is designed for you to fail. So expect yourself to fail and learn, like you were talking about with Kobe Bryant, learn from that mishap, so to speak, and have a good laugh at it while you're doing it. And just move on. It's like the person that, so to speak, wins a tournament is the one that either accepted their failures better than everyone else, or had fewer failures, dealt with it better. So might as well enjoy it.
Yeah. And James, just to give you context, one of the things I do full time is I teach companies about stress management and different things. And one of the things we do is we reverse engineer the worst case scenario. And yeah. We've all had those experiences where something really bad happens that is, in our minds, the worst thing that can happen. But when you look back in hindsight, I would say 9 times out of 10, people say the quote, and that was one of the best things that ever happened to me, right? But in the moment, we let ourselves get overwhelmed by it. and we spiral out of control. And so the focus on learning instead of the fear of failure and this curiosity and wonder, I wonder what this can teach me. I wonder how I can grow from this. It sounds subtle and it sounds cliche, but it is such a different way to live and play golf, really.
Yeah, I mean, you have to. Like you said, in the moment, you think your world is collapsing. The world's going to come to an end. But you have to have some sort of ability to kind of take that moment, see what happened, and what did I do there? How can I avoid that? Or, you know, maybe it wasn't as bad as you thought it was. Like, for, you know, I'll give you a golf example is all right, well, I hooked the ball into the left bunker. Oh my goodness, I'm going to double bogey the hole and I'm going to lose the club championship by one. Well, maybe what you did was that's your shot. Maybe you always play that shot. And what you did was you aimed at that left pin 10 feet away from the edge of the bunker, right? What were you doing? Why didn't you aim more mm-hmm. to the right? And then that shot that you thought was so disastrous actually turned out to win you the championship or something like that. But yeah, just looking back in hindsight, that's so important. I know a lot of times, like with the Scott Fawcett, the decade stuff, the shotgun pattern. One of the things I try to tell all level of players, but I'll use specifically competitive juniors, is look at what your pattern is and how can you use that to your advantage instead of your disadvantage, so that your worst case scenario, your worst shot still ends up to be an acceptable shot or an acceptable miss. Mm-hmm. And vice versa. I mean, I've had kids where it's like they hit a perfect shot. They hit it dead straight and it ended up in the water. Well, why did that happen? You don't want to be, you want to be rewarded for that as well. But
right.
What always happens is like I was talking about the bunker shot, is they hit that shot and immediately everyone panics. What did I do there? Oh my God, I hit such a bad shot. And then they try to tinker and fix it while they're playing. Mm-hmm. So those are usually the players that saying, James, you know what? I had a good stretch of six holes and all of a sudden I fell apart. Why'd you fall apart? And when you look at it, you reverse engineer, like, well, I hooked the ball into the bunker. Well, is that part of your pattern? Because mm-hmm. if it's part of your pattern, maybe you shouldn't have been trying to fix it, because you should have been already planning for that possibility to happen anyway. And it goes back to what I was saying. Maybe you were supposed to aim more right. So don't ticker. I'm not happy with that shot, but you know what? That is one of the shots that I tend to hit. So I'll fix it later on the range, but right now that's okay.
Just
playing it.
It's so funny you say that, James. Literally yesterday I was playing at a 9-hole, just a little par 3 in Los Angeles. And this guy matched up with us. And I'm not kidding. Every shot, he pulls it left and yells, get right, get right. Yeah. And I joked with him. I said, Joe, you have the most consistent miss I have ever seen. Just a 10-yard pull every time. But the funny thing was, you know, you could tell he hasn't been playing too long, but he was upset about that every time. Versus, to your point, James, if he accepted his pattern, he's actually incredibly consistent. But he just wasn't happy with his inconsistency. Yeah. He wasn't leveraging his inconsistency, or it really is a consistency.
Yeah, wait till he gets to that two-way miss. I've got a
problem. Yeah, right?
And that's the tinkering that I was talking about. It's like you're talking about, this guy consistently hits the ball to the left. He's upset about it, and he's telling his ball to get right. Well, if he's kind of thinking about it, he's going like, oh, maybe my face was closed. Let me open up the face. Now, all of a sudden, you're bringing that two-way miss into play. I teach this one person who comes in every week, and she is like a freaking bullseye with her irons, but they're all within 8 to 13 yards. I mean, I could see it, 8 to 13 yards left of center line. And just, I keep pulling it. And I'm standing there going. And so when we're indoors, I literally just take the simulator and just quietly line her up 13 yards to the right. And then she doesn't know I'm doing it. And then all of a sudden, all of her balls are landing right there where she was. Oh, it's fixed now. And I'm like, it's fixed, right? We didn't fix your swing.
Right.
We fixed how you see things. And
mm-hmm.
and it took her probably a good 3 years to finally get that to sink in.
Wow. I mean, you said, James, teaching means inspiring.
Yeah.
Right. I'd love to hear about that. Cause I think a lot of people, you know, I think about this a lot. I think we call things cliches, which just means that we hear them a lot, which then means we don't really hear them. And a lot of times cliches have more truth than anything, but they don't sink in. And so this quote really struck me because really teaching and communications and learning is just saying things in a different way until they connect. So I'm curious how you teach to inspire and maybe how people can learn from that.
Yeah, I think like we were just talking about with failure, this game, I think more than anything else I can think of, makes us feel worse about ourselves than anything else we do.
Yeah.
It's like if we went out on the basketball court and didn't know how to play basketball, and we just threw out some basketballs and started trying to figure it out, and we kept missing shots, airballing like Kobe, it's like we'd all be giggling. We'd be making fun of each other. We'd be laughing. It's like, oh man, you suck. But we keep trying. We just keep doing it. We think 5 minutes after learning how to hold a golf club, we should be hitting the ball as good as Tiger Woods and Jack Nicklaus combined. And we swing and miss, or we hit it fat or something like that. And we're throwing the club thinking, man, I suck. I hate this. So it's kind of taking those situations and making the person just feel better about it. Like with kids, when they hear the term teacher, they think of you as their school teacher. So they don't have a division there. So when they're in their lesson, especially when they meet me for the first time and I ask a question, they're automatically thinking, what does the teacher want me to say? What is the right answer? What am I supposed to say?
Yeah.
Or if it's a subsequent lesson, oh my God, I forgot what he said last week. Oh my goodness, I forgot. I'm in trouble. And what I keep telling kids, so I give stories, I give lines where it's like, hey, I'm not your math teacher. I don't have a red pen in my hand, and this is not your report card. And this is not your essay, and I'm putting red marks all over it and saying, come see me after class. And just letting them realize it's like, hey, like we were talking about with Kobe, it's like, see what happened. Hey, what do you think happened there? What were you trying to do? And then sometimes what it is just simply showing them that, you know, you did everything you were supposed to do there. You did it great. You just didn't hit a good shot. That's okay. And the more we're doing that, the more they start to kind of realize, oh, all right. So I shouldn't be afraid that I hit it over the green. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we're working on wedges and they hit a shot and they hit it like 40 feet short of the hole. And they're looking down at the ground. And they think, what do you think of your swing there? It was bad. Why do you think it was bad? Well, because the ball's not near the hole. It's like, you made a great swing. In fact, it's perfect. Just didn't match the distance. So what do you think you have to do with that perfect swing that you just took to match this distance? And they kind of go like, oh, you mean just take that swing and hit it harder or hit it further or make a bigger, whatever it is. Yeah, yeah. Why don't you just try and do it again with a bigger swing? Right? And just constantly... Yeah. Talking about that, I mean, one of the things that I've been talking a lot lately with students is what I call too much chocolate. And what it is they hit a shot and let's say it goes left. Where do you think the very next one is going to go? It's going to go right.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever that happens, of course, what do people do? Like, oh, that's just as bad as the other one. And I said, no, that's too much chocolate. And they look at me like, what do you mean? I said, you ever go to a nice restaurant and you know they have like the best chocolate sundaes in the world? You have a nice meal. At the end of the meal, the waiter comes out. What would you like? Oh, I want your chocolate sundae. I heard it's amazing. Okay. Comes out. Waiter goes, how's the sundae? It's really good, but there's not enough. You didn't give me a lot of chocolate there. There's only a little bit of chocolate. Oh, okay. Sorry, sir. Comes out, dumps a gallon of chocolate on the sundae. Oh my goodness, sir. I'm so sorry. I gave you too much. No, no, no. There's no such thing as too much chocolate, right? Give me more. I love chocolate. Yeah. Give me chocolate, right? So I always tell them, no, too much chocolate. You just overcorrected. You did the right thing. You just did it too much.
Hmm.
So sometimes it's those kind of things. They kind of get into it and they're like, oh, okay, cool. So I'm not being judged here. I'm not being graded here, right? Let's get to it.
Yeah.
So hopefully that's inspiring in itself.
for sure. James, we want to dig in here a little bit, but before we do, tell the listeners a little bit about how your teaching school or your program came together in Port Washington, New York, and maybe some of your core principles. I think oftentimes listeners and folks like us are always wondering, do you have a system or do you have a set of principles, and just some of your experience in that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, like my reputation is through junior golf, but I give lessons to adults as well. So what's funny is like a lot of what we do in the junior programs, I also do with adults. So it goes across the board, player development. And so what it is just basically focusing on the process. What is it you're trying to do, right? And then let's see what the outcome is. And then we can move from there. And so if you're talking about a system, it's simply asking yourself questions, opening your eyes, and being observant with what's going on. And I think in this day and age, what we see is people are just looking for the latest app that solves the problem for them. And so they don't know how to solve the issue. And so that's why one of the first things I tell students when they meet me is I'm asking you a lot of questions. And I'm asking you to pay attention to what's going on. Do you have to be perfect? Absolutely not. And so that's really it in a nutshell is like, okay, because one person may need to work on one thing and another person may need to work on something that's completely different. So you can't necessarily fit them into a cookie cutter approach. And so, yeah, so there is a little bit of kind of on the fly, so to speak, compromising what's going on. But yeah, basically it's just letting the person know that you have to pay attention to what's going on, but at the same time, you're going to be better for it. And especially with kids, it's telling them, you know what? It's just golf. You're learning about other things. And I'll often say that to them. It's like, I really don't care if you come up to me tomorrow and say, I quit golf. But if you're learning, if you're taking some of the lessons that you're learning here and applying it to other things that you're doing in your life, to school, and eventually when you get a job, if you're doing it there, how you treat other people, right? That then I've done my job, not to make you into like the best Division I college player in the world.
Yeah, that's interesting, James. I started taking lessons probably at 6 years old and, you know, like I said, played competitively at a pretty high level. And I'm 32 now, and I go onto a driving range and I watch teachers with juniors. I reminisce, and I also try to think about what maybe looks different about their experience than mine. So what are the unique challenges maybe teaching this generation of kids compared to the last? Maybe there's some upsides too, but I think the previous generation likes to always harp on the latest generation, but talk us through that. You know, and teaching this group.
Yeah, I think this latest generation, so to speak, it's the shoulder shrug. It's the I don't know. Right. So what are you trying to do? I don't know. Right. And it's even like, hey, listen, what I want you to do is I want you to just can you get your hands as high as you can in the backswing? I don't care where. Statue of Liberty. Then they make a swing. What'd you try to do there? I don't know. What do you mean you don't know? I don't know. It's like, so it's kind of getting over that. It's pressing the button and saying, hey, listen, you know, I'm asking you to do this just like another teacher would, like a boss would, like your parents would, and just paying attention. So again, like I was just saying, it's like, I turn it around. Instead of trying to be that teacher who's wagging their finger at them, I'll go like, you ever notice your parents keep repeating themselves? You go, yeah, kind of annoying, right? Yeah. What do you think is going to stop them from repeating themselves? And then they get like, listen. Yeah. You get it now, huh? Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's like, and so sometimes it's like right away, I'll say like, oh, I want to get your hands higher, Statue of Liberty. And like, what did I just say? And I'll be sarcastic. Like, what did I just say? Oh, get my hands higher. Hey, great job. There you go. And then they get it. They that picks them up right away. And like, hey, what'd you do there?
I tried to get my hands higher.
What do you think you did?
I was okay.
And then, you know, it's like a snowball effect. Then things start moving along. But yeah, it's the shoulder shrug. It's just constantly, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. And right, you know, telling them you do know.
It's but that balance of tough love, right? When, you know, when to bring it out, when not to bring it out. Obviously, yeah. You hear about this generation. And we've heard this from other teachers too, talk about it's a challenge. There's sensitivity issues and you know, you could make the argument for good, bad, and different on all these approaches, but I think we hear this a lot with this, how to navigate, and then social media with these kids' lives is, you know, is something we've talked about with other folks as well. And that's just, you know.
I think part of it too is a fear of success or fear of mistakes. And so what happens a lot of times, these kids are saying, I'm not even talking about serious golfers, just any golfer, is they don't want to make that first step into actually diving into having to make a decision and then being told it was wrong. That that's not it. So they just would rather be in their safety zone and go like, I don't know. And so, you know, for me, I think where I'm lucky and you know, a lot of other teachers, I get kidded around a lot about it, and I bring it on myself, is I'm not a big guy. I'm not tall. I'm like maybe 5'6" if I'm standing erect. So I don't have that imposing figure. And so when I talk to someone, it might be I'm actually looking up at them when I say something like that.
Sure.
But also with smaller kids, I get down on one knee and I talk to them that way so that they realize that I'm not some imposing figure looking down at them. Right. And that I'm looking up at them. And I've had kids break down in front of me. They start crying. And sometimes I've actually pulled that out of them on purpose. And a lot of times I've done it with their parents there so that they could see what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And it's a release valve, because sometimes they feel that pressure so much that just opening up that faucet and letting them release it, they're like, oh, okay. So I don't have to be perfect in this world. Okay, let's go from here.
Yeah. What is that? I mean, and this, Serm, you can answer too. I've actually always been very interested about this, where, you know, I grew up in St. Louis and my dad was the classic, super supportive, loving dad that if I asked if something broke on my bike, let's say the chain came off, right? And I'm like 9, 10 years old. And I go, Dad, can you, you know, fix my bike? He'd say, all right, well, come over and watch me fix it.
Right.
Because the next time you're going to fix it. Bingo. And I go, no, just fix it. Like, I didn't want to know how, but I'm curious what is that about adolescence where we don't want to know? You know, the inquisitive nature is less than when it's like the joke when people say, I wish I would have gone to school when I was 30. You know, when I actually wanted to learn things versus when you're a kid, that's the last thing you want to do.
I think part of it, obviously, human nature is we're always looking for the easiest way to do things. Yeah. And so with kids, it's like, why bother? Why do I have to do that when you can do it for me?
Yeah.
Or like I said, we can find an app that figures it out, Google it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think part of it too is if you really inherently love something, you just want to take it apart. So for instance, you're using the example of fixing your bike chain. There isn't any kind of spark there. There isn't like, I really want to learn
mm-hmm.
how to fix it. But if you're fascinated by watching how the gears work and like, gee, I wonder what are the machinations of all of this stuff going on? That in itself might suddenly be like, yeah, you know what, Dad, let me see that. Or what you do is you're the one that broke the chain because you took your bike apart to see how it works. And now your dad's upset at you because you took it apart. Or maybe your dad's seeing that and going like, okay, now that you took it apart, can you remember how to put it back together?
Mm-hmm.
And I think once that's part of us where we're trying to see if we can create that spark in the person to not mind being on the putting green and figuring out how do I get this ball to stop where I want it to stop. And right. And again, like I said earlier, it's like, it isn't just about golf. It's like, can you undertake that with anything you do in your life?
Right. Well, absolutely. And let's talk about how you take your junior players out in the cold and the rain. Remember, Evan, Los Angeles, this is foreign to him, even though he grew up in the Midwest, he doesn't remember this. But it's about creating an environment to make them tougher, right? As opposed to you just, you know, whether it be yelling or you know, or using word choices. Like, you know, when I was growing up practicing in the upper Midwest here in Chicago in the rain, you know, or just in bad weather, it taught me how to prepare and it taught me how to be patient, right? So but let's take the average Joe who, you know, 40 years old, who gets over to the driving range, right? Well, go practice on a windy day, right? Once it be, you know, learn how to, you know, use different tempos. So what is it about that environment that is so key, especially when these kids want to be great players, right? What is this, those harder days look like with those kids?
Well, I think also I think what is key to that is that you've already created an environment that's welcoming, that they love being there. I mean, basically, you can substitute the golf course for a playground. And it could be 35 degrees out and the kids still want to go to the playground. They want to go, like, oh, but there's snow on the ground. Oh, that's okay. I want to go to the monkey bars or something like that. So it's the environment that you're creating for them. So at the golf course, if they feel like, yeah, I don't care that it's 40 degrees outside, I want to go there, right? That's just like the playground. So I think part of it is can you, as the instructor, as the coach, have that in place or build that wherever you are, right? And so it's not going to be, because our human nature, like I said, it's, if it's really cold out, I'll find an excuse not to go. Mm. So whatever you've created has to override that, yeah, it is kind of cold out today. But man, I, right. James said we were going to do this today on the golf course. So yeah, I want to go. And so when parents are telling me that, that's when I know I'm doing my job really well.
One thing I heard that you do, James, is actually similar to my high school golf coach, where he made practice so fun. Like, we would have these, he called them funky par three tournaments. I've never talked about it on this show before, where, you know, and I think you talked about something similar on another interview where, you know, hole one, 130 yards, you got to tee off with a driver. Hole two, you got to tee off from a bunker. Hole three, you can't use a wedge. And all of these things. And looking back, that was really smart, because if on days we didn't do that, you just kind of like go into autopilot and you play nine holes and you're not really getting better. It's fun to be out there if you have friends on the team and play, but it's that kind of stuff, you know, that can make short game practice fun and can make other things fun. And honestly, just the mindset of treating the golf course like your playground is kind of invigorating. I've never really thought about it until now, but it's kind of fun thinking about going to the course as your playground.
It's, you know, we've become so score oriented, and especially for the competitive juniors, they grade themselves on their score. They, like you said earlier, it's like, it doesn't reflect who you are. And you have to realize that the golf course is your lab. That's where you're doing your experiments. And it's like you're sitting at home at night, you're lying in bed and you're thinking about why couldn't I hit that shot? Oh, you know what? Maybe it was this. And then thinking, you know what? Tomorrow when we go out there again, I'm going to try that and see if it works. And you know what? If it doesn't work, okay, that's okay. I'll just try and find another solution for it. Mm-hmm. Versus standing on the first tee and going, I have to make par here, because it's like, I don't care. And I tell them all the time, it's like, I don't care if you triple, quadruple bogey this hole. It's like, what are you trying to do? What are you working on? Or are you having fun on this hole? And one of the things I started doing was, you're not allowed to hit the fairway on your tee shot. And what was funny about it is, of course, the kids are looking at me like, what do you mean? It's like, you hit the fairway with your tee shot, it's a two-shot penalty. And what was happening was, so they would aim at a bunker and they'd hit it in the bunker, and you're human, you're so conditioned, they slam their club down. Why are you slamming your club down? I'm in the bunker. And I'm looking at them, yeah. Where, number one, what's the rule? Oh yeah, you're not allowed to hit the fairway. Okay, good. Number two, where were you aiming? At the bunker. Where did you hit the ball? And what is that telling you?
Yeah.
And then light bulb goes, oh, I'm accurate. Yeah. Hey, thank you. Right. And that kind of tone, that sarcasm I'm using, that's what I mean. It's like not shaking my finger at them like you did bad. It's like, hey, you get it now? Is the hamster moving now? And stuff like that. And they're like, oh. And then you get the other kids who are like, they still hit the fairway. And they look at me like, I'm sorry, I can't help it. It just doesn't make sense to me. And it's all win-win, because then I'd say to them, see, you're so worried about not hitting the fairway when you play in a tournament. Now I'm telling you not to hit the fairway is okay. And you're like, no, I got to hit the fairway. So guess what? The pressure's off on you, bud. It's like they go like, "Oh my God, it was so easy," and so it's less pressure.
It's kind of the secret of the par train. Most people think you need to be on the par train to enjoy the ride, but actually, you enjoy the ride, and then the par train opens its doors, and you walk right on, right?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was thinking about something similar this morning. The par train. It's like, okay, yeah. We got to turn the party train into the birdie train, into the eagle train, into, you know, or not the par train, but the party train.
No, it's interesting too. And James, to hear you talk about your players. Look, I'm always curious. Right now, junior players and adult players are obsessed with hitting the golf ball far. And for good reason too. I mean, I think it's, I think you probably say you got to teach your junior players how to hit it far. Right. And we'll figure it out how to hit it straight. But when you're giving lessons with these kids and you see these kids that are really developing well, when do you implement how to hit a knockdown, or how do you, you know, start thinking about creativity around the greens and chipping with different clubs? And hey, I got one chip and I'm going to hit three different shots to that pin, and getting them excited about, the areas of the game that in the end of the day are going to lower your scores, but it's a balance, right? Because we want to hit it far.
There's so many different ways to attack that. And like couple examples. One way is we might be doing something completely different, and we're, you know, whether it's with one kid or a bunch of kids, we're working on something. And out of nowhere, one kid hits a low one. And so they think they made a mistake. And I see that, and I'll just say like, oh, hey, Ethan, what were you trying to do there? And it's like, I was trying to, I'm like, no. Perfect knockdown. That's a perfect 5-iron knockdown.
Yeah.
And at that point, I could say, can you do that again? Whatever you just did, can you try and do it again? Or I might say, remember that, because in about 10 minutes, we're going to be doing that. And that kid, now all of a sudden that fear of making a mistake disappears. Like, okay, all right. They now they can't wait.
Right.
And so they're really making a concerted effort to remember what it is they just did. And, you know, plus it's already logged in their memory. That thing that they thought was a mistake was actually a good shot. Now that's one way of doing it. Mm-hmm. Another way is, okay, so we're going to work on knockdowns today, and I'll put like a little magnet thing on the club face with a ball attached to it. Right. And so, I'll have the kids go like, all right, so this is what we normally do. Now we want to hit a knockdown. What's a knockdown? And then they go into definitions like, all right, so we're trying to lower it. What do I have to do to this club to make this ball go lower? And they go like, well, you got to do this. Okay. And then I give it to each one of the kids. It's like, make it lower. And they go like, okay. And I said, now, when you're hitting balls for the next 10 minutes, 5 minutes, can you figure out a way to do it? And then let's see what each of you come up with, right? And then so they're trying to figure it out. And again, same thing, I'll tell them like, listen, if the ball is skipping on the ground, that's okay, that's too much chocolate, right? You just maybe overdid it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes what they're trying to do is they're trying to do it with like a hybrid, and they can't get it even like 6 inches off the ground. And again, that's an opportunity to teach them about something else. It's like, yeah, maybe this shot shouldn't be hit with that club, right? But there's always so many opportunities. And so for the coach, the creative signal, the creative light always has to be on. Mm-hmm. You have to react to moments. That's what I was saying earlier. It's like, you see an opportunity right there, you got to jump on that and just say, like I was saying, no, that wasn't a bad shot. Remember that, because we're going to be hitting shots like that in a minute, and just constantly using it to your advantage.
That's great. It's this figure it out too, right? Hit it low. Okay, pretty good. Lower. Well, I don't know. Just, we got to figure it out, right? Like, it just, and then yeah. you're pushing, right, your players in a way that has that creative touch, so to speak. Is that fair?
Yeah. And like we were talking about being on the course, it's sometimes we'll be out there with the kids and the kid hits a ball and it's like 40 yards short of the green and, you know, just the worm burner. And instead of going up there and going like, what was that? How could you miss the green? And it's like, hey, Ryan, what were you trying to do there? Oh, I was trying to see if I can hit like that 5-iron knockdown, you know, that I saw Scott Stallings do on a video and blah, 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 like that. Oh, okay. What happened? Oh, I just got it a little bit too much and stuff like that. Oh, okay, cool. No problem. What are you going to do next? Well, I'm going to try and hit that. I'm going to try and hit that pitch shot onto the green and see if I can like one putt afterwards. Okay, cool. So I'm not spanking them for a mistake. I'm like, okay, keep up with the creativity. Let's see what happens.
But that dialogue right there, and you can probably tell by our questions, James, but we focused a lot on the mental game on this show. That dialogue, that attitude, that energy, right? You can just feel the energy in that discussion. It's very light. It's very find it and hit it again. It's very free. And that is what people need to play with more. I'm sure you have lessons. We were talking off air, Sermon and I were before you came on. I know you teach, you're known for teaching juniors, but what I'm most interested in is I bet you there are lessons that you have from teaching juniors that would help seniors learn how to play more like a kid again.
Oh, yeah.
Versus teaching juniors how to play well, right?
Yeah, I think, I mean, one of the best things that happened to me this past year was this gentleman came to me, an older gentleman, and he was talking, you know, like, I'm losing distance and everything like that, and I'm not enjoying the game anymore. So I gave him a 1-hour lesson. And at the end of it, he was like, I had so much fun. And I was like, great. That's awesome. That's what we're supposed to do. And then he messages me later and he says, I want you to give my wife a lesson because she's really distraught about her game. She wants to quit. And I want her to enjoy the hour with you and really have some fun. And I was like, oh, wow, that really got to me. And I was like, my pleasure. And then she showed up and just a wonderful woman. And we ended up spending like 2 hours. I said, you know, the first hour was a gift from your husband. The second hour is a gift from me. And we just had some fun. She was giggling like a little schoolgirl. She's like, oh my God, like, that's all I had to do and everything. And we even had fun at her husband's expense. I was like, I bet you Ralph was telling you to do this, right? He goes, oh, you know, he's always telling me what to do. And I was like, all right, I got that covered, ma'am. Don't worry. I'll tell your husband to back off. And she's like, oh, and it was just a lot of fun. And she sent me a nice note afterwards. And so it's just stuff like that. That's what you're trying to do. James, I have no idea how far she hit the ball, right?
There is nothing more fun, I think, than seeing someone in a lesson just start laughing because they did something that felt so easy. We have a video of Cermak and I took a train up to Chicago before a member guest from St. Louis, and he gave me a short game lesson because Cermak's a masterful around the greens. And we have a video of him teaching me how to chip and pitch the ball without, I was trying to like mimic my swing. I was using way too much of my body. And I just hit this perfect little pitching wedge runner, and I just started laughing. Because that's the stuff that's so awesome. It's such a hard game, yet a lot of things are so simple.
You know what? It's that. And it's also the guy who comes in for the lesson or the woman who's very, you know, very tight-lipped and very, very serious. And then they hit a shot and they go like, holy shit. And then they go, oh, sorry. No.
Well, James, it's amazing what we actually, for as hard as golf is, the hardest sport, what we're actually capable of if we can unlock some sort of new way of thinking or right approach. I think for Av, we were chipping and I'm like, hey, you know, you can use your hands and your arms when you chip. You know, you can have a little fun with this and, you know, you don't have to use your kind of swing mechanics like. But you got to know what the lie is. The lie is going to tell the story, right? And then everything kind of starts there. But and you like you start laughing at it because you're like, well, this has been in me for years, right? Like, I mean, I can but what that's, those are the magic moments, right? And so, talk about it, as a teacher, that's the fun stuff, right? You know?
Oh yeah. It's like you live for those kind of moments. And I think that's what also drives you to be better as a teacher is you want more of those moments. It's like, you don't want one moment in a lesson. You want 50 moments. You want one moment like that in every minute that you teach. And so it's always like, how can I do this? How can I make this better? And sometimes what happens is you stumble on something and you just made one person so happy and they're better. And you go like, I wonder if that'll work with the next person. And then they're happy. Mm-hmm. Oh, I wonder if that'll work with the next person and they're happy. So now you're starting to develop a little bit of a trend. And so now you're just trying to find out who's going to be the exception to the rule. Mm-hmm. Oh, it didn't work with this person. Okay. And then, well, why didn't it work with this person? And that's the constant search for kind of, you were asking me earlier about what's my system is like, well, that's my system is categorizing things. And yeah, this will work for this type of player. This will work for this type of player, et cetera, and moving down the line. But yeah, it's looking for those moments. And what I found is through my experience is those moments happen more often when you are, again, keeping things really simple. And also really sympathetic, even empathetic to the other person and understanding what kind of language or visual language is going to click with that person. So, you know, if the person's a little bit more visually oriented, give them something that'll visually click with them, right? Maybe you need to do more demonstrations and they'll get it versus someone. I always use the example of this woman that I taught years ago. She came in for a couple lessons and I just told her, I want you to move your hands this way. And we started doing it. And then she had this little grin on her face. And so I knew what it was moving in this direction. Anyways, it's like, what does that feel like to you? And that's why she was smiling. And she goes, feels like I'm spreading peanut butter on bread. Wasn't me talking about external rotation, flexion of the wrist, extension of the, like, you know, like Palmer. No, it was like, spread the peanut butter. And then sometimes it'd be the other hand. And I'd be like, pretend the peanut butter is on the back of the hand and spread the peanut with the peanut butter with the back of the hand. She's like, and I remember to this day, where she's like, I can't believe peanut butter is the focus of my lesson.
Right. That's all we talk about. Right.
Right. It's like, that's all we talk about. And so again, it's being observant and just listening to the other person.
So James, let's see if we can have one of those moments right now. I love being a selfish interviewer asking you about my own game. So let me give you some context, James. I played baseball my whole life and I've been as low as a 5. I've ballooned up to an 8 right now. But my biggest thing, and I think a lot of people struggle with this, is obviously everyone's going to say they want to be more consistent. Right. But for me, it's frustrating to go from shooting mid 70s consistently to high 80s, hitting it all over the face and having a two-way miss. I mean, you can't play golf that way. So for me, I'm a crazy arm swinger because of my background with baseball. My hips know how to move, but I don't really rotate well. So I've been working for over like probably 2 years now. I went to George Gankus a couple times. I couldn't figure out how to feel it. I couldn't figure out how to implement it. Like it makes sense when I'm practicing it without a club in the mirror, but when I have a club in that split second, I can't do it. So I think what I'm trying to understand that I think will help a lot of people is I know the flaws in my swing. And sometimes it's really challenging to understand what to focus on first, because if I'm focusing on a backswing thought and my rotation with my left hip clearing and transferring my weight, it's too much stuff. So like I open my hips, I'll take you through them. I open my hips too much in the backswing. My right elbow gets flared at the top. I have a long army swing that has a tendency to go a bit over the line and I don't have a lot of rotation. And so I have really inconsistent ball striking that can lead to a two-way miss, especially with the driver. And so then I think to myself, I'm going to the range and I'm like, okay, should I focus on not having my hip open up as much in the backswing because maybe that'll help me clear more versus when it's way open. I don't have enough. I'm like way too open. I can't clear it. Is it my right elbow? How do you help people get understand where to start and what will have the biggest impact when you see so many flaws? You're not quite sure which one to fix first or focus right. on.
And so one of the first things I would have you do is I would just put a ball in front of you and say, this is the only ball you're going to hit. What would happen to the ball? So either you would hit it and we would see, or, right. And I would say, like, I just want you to make a swing. I'm not even giving you a target. Just make a swing and let's see what happens. And for the most part, the person will hit the ball and you'll say, yeah, see that. That's normally what happens. And I might even ask you, like, does that swing feel like that's your swing? Yeah, that's my swing. Okay. And what happened to the ball? So what do you think would happen to the ball if I just gave you that one and you would just go up and swing and hit it? Or I might even put pressure on you, say, this is the only shot you get. 18th hole at Augusta mm-hmm. National, blah, 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 middle of the fairway, hit it. All right. So what shot do you think would pop up?
I'd probably hit like a little baby draw
with
an iron. Yeah.
So now I'm going to go into baseball. So you played baseball and you played a lot of baseball and mm-hmm. that's your love, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So were you a contact hitter or a power hitter?
Contact. I was contact. A line drive gap that's hitter.
What I was going to say line drive, right?
Yeah.
Gap hitter, right field or center field or left field?
Right. Right center, right field. Yeah.
Okay. Did you finish forward? Did you get a sense that you would hit the ball? You'd already be running to first, or were you on your back leg and then going forward?
Probably on my back.
So you'd be back, hit the right. And then you would be taking your first step to first base. So do you find any similarities in your swing from what I just asked you in terms of how you hit the ball?
I mean, there's got to be based on my, I think I saw a quote. You said there's no such thing as muscle memory, only experience. So based on my experience, then I would assume so. Yes. But it's hard to make that connection because they feel so different, right?
Because what we would be trying to figure out is are you, when you're hitting a golf ball, are you reverting to certain tendencies that were in your baseball swing, or are you fighting your tendencies in your baseball swing? Right. It's not that we want to swing exactly like our baseball swing, but it's always going to be one of two extremes. Mm-hmm. It's like, so that's the case of either your old baseball swing is hurting you or it's helping you. It's one or the other.
Yeah.
In that scenario. And that's what we'd be trying to find out. Right. So you were talking about in your baseball days, you were a gap hitter, right center, mm-hmm. left center. Right. So what would a draw be? A draw would start to right center field and then draw back to center field. Now, in your case, is your ball going to be a push draw or just it starts out straight and goes left?
Lately, it's been more of a push draw.
Push?
Yeah.
Right. So I would take a guess that there's probably little things going on in your swing that are similar to what you were doing in your baseball days. Right. So now the question is, it's like, again, preference for teaching is those things that you were pointing out about the long backswing, the flying elbow, all that stuff. It's some teachers might say, no, that's okay, right? Because if we try to fix them, we might be, right, trying to fix Jim Furyk, so to speak. It's like, maybe that's part of what makes you good. We don't know if that's what makes you good or makes you bad, right? You're assuming that those technical mm-hmm. aspects are what's off. So again, just spending some time together on the range and figuring things out. But I think like what you're saying is like, maybe just working a little bit on club face control. Like, would you say your misses are left?
With irons, yes. Right. With woods, no.
So we're talking about irons. When you hit a shot, have you ever had this situation happen to you where as soon as you hit the ball, you just think, oh, I flushed it. That's mm-hmm. as good as I could be. And then you look up and the ball's left and you're like, wait a minute. That doesn't make sense to me. I thought I just crushed that one. That should be hitting the flagstick and it's 30 yards left.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Sometimes what happens in those situations is that your sense of where the target is not where it really is. And so what I would do is I would actually stand in front of you and tell you to set up to the ball. And then without looking up, can you now take your left hand and point to where you think the target is? And people that kind of go through what you're doing will tend to do this, is they'll set up and now point to the target and they'll go like this. So I'm pointing way back over there. And what happens is that happens to be where they're hitting the ball. And then I'll tell them the same thing. Now take it up to the top and without looking, where's the target? And I've actually had people, no exaggeration, go like this. They go underneath and behind them.
Interesting.
And so that's the first thing I would do with you is see if where you think the target is isn't really where the target is. And then what happens is that then I'll move your finger and you're of course, your reaction is going to be like, holy shit, that's really far right. Yeah, but where have all your balls been going? How many balls have you hit that you thought you hit it really good and you look up and it's not there, it's there. And sometimes the simple solution is that is like, all right, now that you know that the target is there and not there, right, let's just see you hit some balls knowing and feeling like you're hitting it over there. And like, I have a video, maybe what I'll do is I'll send it to you later of this guy. And it's just like, he's like, oh my God. It's like, I can't believe that.
Yeah.
And like, he's hitting it right at the flagstick every time, but he's telling me that feels so far right.
Yeah.
And so it was a simple drill. It's the old put the alignment stick in front and it's club face. It says, hey, hit every ball to the right of that stick. Hit every ball to the right of that stick. That's it. Nothing more. Yep.
Well, James, our alignment feels different every day.
Right? Every day.
Our feet,
right.
Our shoulders, our bones, however, how we look. And
every hole.
Every hole. And your alignment will shift based on what your mind's tricking you or telling you on what you see.
Yeah.
And we don't work hard enough at alignment. Like,
absolutely not, right?
Nobody works, you can, and that's what the pros do, right? They're always working hard on their fundamentals and just ingraining that, right?
But on that, Serm, I don't know, because we talk about this a lot, and I find myself going to the range and not quite sure how to do it. The only thing that makes sense to me with alignment is standing to the ball and then putting it down to see where I was aimed. But even that is sometimes hard to tell, right? Because I'm looking at the alignment stick and sometimes it's not as clear. It's not clear as day to me. It's not black or white. Even that is hard to see. So that's hard for people to understand how to even look at alignment.
That might be just as we were saying it, that alone might be your day to day change. It's like, hey, you know what? My eyes see it perfectly today and tomorrow I can't tell. Boy, this looks really off. It doesn't even look like the same golf course range. It's whatever. So it's like everything else in golf. It's that constant adjustment and saying, hey, you know what? Today I may not shoot 75. I might shoot 79. And it's more of a management day than anything else. And then other days you just feel like you can't miss. And you're thinking like, I might even break par today. Mm-hmm. And so there's that constant fluctuation. But like you were saying, well, if I'm practicing, what do I do? And so one of the things you can do, like what I like to do with students is have them actually line up perfectly straight to a target. But I make it very clear to them that we're lining up to that spot as reference, not as the end point. Mm. And then I want to see you hit balls. And it's, you know what, if your balls end up at that spot, so be it. But what we're also looking for, like we started this at, is like, well, if all of your balls are about 12 to 15 yards to the left of it, what we're seeing is that you should be aiming 12 to 15 yards to the right and playing your shot, right? And that's what we're trying to find out when we line up straight to begin with, is what are your tendencies? So I think one of the things that might, I don't know if it'll help you, but what might be happening is you're so target oriented, you meaning the golfer, that you're inherently thinking, if I haven't lined this up perfectly straight, I might mess everything up. So I got to make sure, right? As opposed to, all right, let me just line myself up straight. And then now I'm going to hit balls and see where they all go in relation to that. So sometimes that'll help. Yeah.
It's so essential, right? And I've, getting a lesson of learning how to do it, right? I mean, it's an ongoing battle with alignment. But James, we want to get you out of here, but we want to ask you this. For our listeners, you know, you and I have bonded over our cold weather Goff, right? And if it's going to rain in a couple, two straight weeks in Los Angeles, Evan's going to have to pivot a little bit. So,
yeah,
you know, in the winter months, I mean, what's a drill or what's a mindset to think about or to work on when you're at home for players? You know, what is the winter? What is the, you know, the days you can't be out there or the months?
Right.
What do we do then? What's important for when we get back to the season? So,
yeah, I think what happens is we become accustomed to thinking that it has to be hitting balls, it has to be full swings, I have to be at the range, and you know what? It's too cold, I don't have time to get there, or I'm in my garage or in my basement and I don't have enough space to swing, let alone hit a ball.
Sure.
So, what your winter training should be is just training yourself for movement. I mean, everyone's always worried about positions in the golf swing. And, you know, talking to countless golf instructors, there's only two positions. There's the setup and there's the finish, and everything else is what's happening in between. So getting your body accustomed to moving a certain way, maybe working on flexibility. Like one of the things I try and get a lot of adults to do is, and especially now with all of the COVID stuff going on, is they're working from home, is maybe you're grabbing the edge of your desk or your chair and just working on hip rotations, maybe doing about 5 or 10 in either direction, and just working on movement patterns or something like that. Or when you're working with your coach, or it might be me specifically, what do you think you should be doing? And you don't have to do 137 million repetitions either. Like I've told people, it's like, listen, you're on a Zoom call. I want you to do this 10 times in each direction, then sit back down on your call. And then another time I might want you to just feel like you're just doing something with your arms. Mm-hmm. I just want you to do this, and just that, make that part of your routine. It's almost like walking to the fridge and getting something to eat. It's like, well, while you're walking, you know, can you work on doing something like this as you're walking? Right? Mm-hmm. No one's in the house. No one's going to think you're weird or anything like that. Right. Or standing in front of the mirror and doing this and doing that. And like I said, like 5 repetitions here, 10 repetitions there, 20 repetitions here or there. And then you're done. And foot spray powder is the best thing, because you don't have to hit golf balls. You can spray that on a welcome mat and there's your golf ball. And what's great about it is you can put 2 dots down. That's the gate that the club passes through. Mm-hmm. Can you pass through that gate without touching the 2 dots? Or you put a 3rd dot in the middle. That's the golf ball. And what's cool about it, and maybe you spray a line behind it, so you're working on not hitting it fat.
I like that.
And then when you hit the dot, what happens is if you look at the club face, that spray, that dot that you just sprayed is now on the club face. It tells you where on the face you would have hit the ball. Right?
Cermak's going to be on Amazon right after this, buying athlete's foot spray. I know it.
Oh, he's got 3 bottles in his bag.
Well, James, this was super fun. I think we would echo the same thing that your student's wife said. I think this was super fun. We really enjoyed it. We appreciate you coming on. I believe everyone can find you at James Hong Golf at all of the social channels. Is there anywhere else or anything else you'd like to say to as a sign off?
No, I just thank you guys for having me here. This was a lot of fun. It was funny when I first got the invite. On that Monday or something, the 8th or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I actually thought it was that day.
Right. Yeah. We sent it a little bit far out.
I logged on that day.
That's funny.
You know, talk about like Bill, big L on my forehead.
Well, hey, you were excited.
A lot of build up for this, right?
Everyone's excited to hop on the train. You know, everyone, it's a good ride.
That's funny.
So this was a lot of fun. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Well, we'd love to have you back again. Yeah. We wish you nothing but the best, and try and stay warm out there. All right, James?
Yeah, try and stay dry.
Boo. Take care, James.
Take care.